everyone, and welcome to Four Panel, your weekly guide to the weird and wild world of comics. I'm Andrew, and as per usual, I'm joined by my co-host, Rob.
Hello!
And Mick.
Hello!
So, how are we all doing today?
Good.
Yeah, not bad. Not bad. Not bad at all.
Well, we are certainly doing better than the heroes of Marvel Comics. We've got a whole...
God, are we talking about Marvel Comics? Oh...
Sometimes I wonder why we have you, Mick.
Well,
it's because then you'd have no one to sack.
That's very true. He does have an important role in the four-panel ecosystem.
This is true. I mean, we did spend all of last week talking about the stranger side of Superman's powers.
Yeah, can we go back and do that?
No, because we kind of ran out. We need DC to come up with more.
And also, we have so many War of the Realms books.
Oh, God, so many.
Got like 7 different ones, so we're just doing a whole show about War of the Realms. Of which one of the hosts of this show was perhaps not as big a fan as the other two.
Indeed.
Yeah, you could say that.
Look, I'm not saying I didn't enjoy it. It's just that I got to issue 2 and then remembered I had some paint I needed to watch dry.
That does sound like you're saying you didn't enjoy it.
I'll be honest, if I hadn't read the Jane Foster run of Thor and I was coming into War of the Realms blind, then I don't think I would have been able to settle into it as well.
I think
actually, that wasn't it. That isn't what put me off.
Well, we may as well get into it. War of the Realms was the 6-issue event miniseries that came out fairly recently. Written by Jason Aaron as the kind of big climax of his Thor run, with art by Russell Dauterman and art by and colours by Matthew Wilson.
Yep.
So, we may as well talk about the plot a bit. So, the plot involves the dark elf Malekith, who was played by Christopher Eccleston in that one Thor movie that you just remembered exists. And he uses... basically, his own version of the Bifrost Bridge called the Black Bifrost to get his gang of Thor bad guys who've been terrorizing all the other realms and launch a big assault on Earth.
Yeah, isn't it like Cinder, who's the daughter of Surtur, and Enchantress, and Laufey, the king of the ice giants?
Laufey, that's what his name is. I was get that confused with like Utgard Loki, who is a different frost giant that has the same name as Loki, but is not the one that is Loki's dad.
No, I always got confused with that. Wasn't Utgard Loki the mage king or the witch king of the frost giants or something like that?
Yeah, I think like he was the king, because there's actually 3, because there's like also Ymir or however you say it. It was like the original frost giant. Then Laufey is Loki's dad. Then Utgard Loki is the king of the frost giants, I think.
You're right about the 3 kings, because there was a 3rd king. Ymir was kind of like their parent in the way that Kronos is the parent of the Greek pantheon type thing. Shh, Andrew, Grandad's gone to sleep.
To be fair to Mick, I guess he probably does find all this Norse mythology a bit dull since he already lived through it all.
Well, this was my first problem with War of the Realms, in that it did feel a bit like a pseudo-history lesson without the joy of being able to bunk off. I had grave misgivings when it opened with a map. That's never a good sign. Especially when it's a map of a tree.
No, that's the Lord of the Rings trauma coming back there.
God, see, this is just one of these like fundamental ideological differences that we can't get over. Because I open a comic book, first thing I see is a map. I think, hell yeah.
Let me just stipulate, this was a map of a tree.
The world tree.
I know. It also had history annotations. It was just... My second problem with it is the characters that are in it. Yes, you've got some big hitters. You've got your Logan, you've got your Loki, you've got Odin. But you've also got a far greater number of supporting characters that they have to explain who they are a lot.
It was simple. I just told you. All you had to do was read War of the Realms and also 7 years' worth of Thor comics. Quite frankly, if you're not going to put the effort in for the show, I don't know what you're doing here. You might have to be fired again.
As I said, without reading the Jane Foster one, I would have found this tough going initially. I mean, I've got 7 trade paperbacks for War of the Realms that I read through, including one that you haven't read through, Andrew. But we'll get to that later. But yeah, we were talking about the War of the Realms, the story.
Yeah, to balance things out, I thought the story of War of the Realms was freaking great.
See, I quite liked it. I don't know, I'm a bit partial to Norse mythology as it is, but I liked the fact that it seemed like Marvel had decided that War of the Realms was their opportunity to do something a bit more brutal, actually put more emphasis on just how violent the conflict was.
Yeah, because I think I'll just say we are going to do some spoilers in this recap, so you know you might want to skip to the reviews if you're still waiting to read War of the Realms. Loki just gets straight up eaten.
Yeah,
Laufey picks him up and just chomps.
And the Valkyries, bloody hell.
Yeah, like seeing Valkyrie get, even though you don't actually see her, like, get decapitated, you see like the big spray of blood. It's like, it's effective.
Yeah.
Especially because I think Russell Dauterman, like his art, it's quite, you know, pretty, and everyone looks very much like they're sort of elves from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
So to see them suddenly like get stabbed through the stomach and there's blood everywhere, it's a bit, crikey Moses.
Yeah.
Also, what I think, well, probably my two main things I like about this are that it's a really good, very cathartic, very action-packed cap off to all the Thor stuff, and does a good job of like incorporating a lot of the storylines from the last 7 years. And I think it also works quite well as an event, in a way that a lot of events don't, because, you know, like we said, this is Malekith attacking all of Earth. So there's plenty of opportunities for kind of, you know, all these side stories and spin-offs without them feeling kind of as perfunctory as they sometimes do in these big events.
Yeah, that was the other thing that I really liked about this. I mean, there were two real things that I liked about this. Number one was exactly what you just said, the fact that it was all over planet Earth rather than just Manhattan or New York City or somewhere in the United States.
Yeah. Even if that is coincidentally where the assault just so happens to start.
Yeah. But the fact that it had other areas of the planet that it touched on and acknowledged there was stuff going on in these other corners of the world as well. The other thing I liked was the fact that you actually got to see Berserker Thor.
Yes. Because like there's a bit where like so basically after the initial assault, Thor's not there to help out because he's captured by frost giants. So Frigga, his mother, sort of takes over Earth's defense. And
you mean Freya?
Marshall's like,
it's Freya.
Yeah, it's because I know that there was a time when like Frigga, Freya, and someone else, they were like the All Mothers.
Yeah.
But no, I think it's just one of them. But yeah, I think it is Freya, not Frigga, who is like just the one Thormum.
I've read various things about that, but we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, so basically she marshals like 3 main forces, which is where one of the spin-off books comes in.
Yeah.
You've got Captain America leads a team to go rescue Thor. Freya herself leads another team to go capture the Black... Well, initially destroy the Black Bifrost, then later to just capture it.
That's Strike Force, isn't it?
Yeah, and also Captain Marvel. She's kind of in charge of a lot of the rest of Earth's heroes, just trying to fight back the invading forces while this is going on.
Yeah.
And yeah, and you've got that great bit where like Captain America's team goes to rescue Thor, and he's just standing there like on top of a mountain of frost giants, just screaming.
You know, send more frost giants. I'll kill them all. just with his bloody axe, hammer, whatever it is, and just, you know, covered in blood with his eyes just raging.
Thor's cool as heck, isn't he?
Thor is cool as heck. I quite liked Strikeforce for a couple of reasons. The first reason was, obviously, you know, the whole thing with She-Hulk and Frank Castle. I liked the way they were trying to depict Frank Castle. I don't necessarily agree with it, having had a chance to think about it, you know, but I kind of like the way they were trying to depict Frank Castle in that particular section.
You know, I was going to say, we've talked about it. Technically, we haven't talked about it before, because we talked about it in an ill-fated segment where we realised that all of War of the Realms cannot be covered in a 10-minute review section.
Yes.
Say that, yeah, I don't like how it treats, because I think it's kind of what you were hinting at, that it's quite sort of glorifies Frank Castle a bit, makes him out. It's sort of a bit like DC can do with Batman, where they feel the need to like justify why is this guy who's just a guy hanging out with all these all-powerful characters.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Punisher's just, I prefer him to be just some guy with a gun who's like getting rid of gangsters and stuff.
Yeah. Spider-Man's in here, and what's not to love about Spider-Man riding a flying horse, carrying a shield and wearing a helmet that allows him to talk to said horse?
Yeah. I think there's also a great bit in the main series later on. Well, first of all, two great bits. There's one with that bit where he's got his shield and then suddenly notices that everyone's got like massive maces and hammers and swords and stuff.
Yeah.
And there's an even better bit later on where he just makes friends with the giant spiders of hell.
Yes. Yes. Spider-Man is always a plus because he's just, you know, it's difficult to take things seriously. I did like that, but one of the other things I liked about the Strikeforce one was from the last story with Captain Marvel. Okay, they're not really well-known heroes, but they still get killed.
I'm not sure they do, actually. I think you're talking about, like, Black Knight and Spitfire and Union Jack.
No, they get saved.
Yeah, then.
They get saved by Captain Britain and by Captain Marvel and the rest of them, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. Those.
It's just a bit later on after they go visiting Captain Britain's school for gifted children, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, the B-Men.
Yeah, the B-Men. And, Venom. Venom's the one who kind of, the symbiote gets taken, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And, like, Malekith uses that to make, is he the sword that, like, Gore, the God Butcher, in the first arc of Thor had? A weapon which has the, quite frankly, excellent name of All Black, the Necro Sword.
Yep. And for some reason, Deadpool's on the War Avengers team.
Desperate times and all that, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'll be honest.
At least he can stand in the way of things.
Mm.
I'll be honest, this does sound like it's a saga that's been written purely so that lots of people who thought of really cool stuff to do can squeeze them all into one story.
That's basically it.
Yeah, pretty much.
And I think this is the problem. I think, for me, I'm finding that Marvel's events are trying too hard to be too big. Yeah. And War of the Realms would have excited me 30 years ago or 20 years ago. But now it just feels it's a cut-and-paste excuse to do something that's almost Civil War 3, but isn't Civil War 3, but we're going to change the setting. Well, and we're going to do some really cool set pieces within it, but ultimately it's just cutting and paste a big fight between lots of our characters.
I don't necessarily agree with that, because Civil War 1 and 2 was hero versus hero, whereas with this one you have a very clear demarcation between the good guys and the bad guys, so it's a lot easier. You know who you want to root for, and obviously you're rooting for the heroes.
But that's why Civil War I had less of an issue with, because you've got that level of interest in that it's good guys against good guys, ostensibly. So picking your side, if you like, as a reader, is a lot more nuanced. Whereas if it's bad guys fighting good guys, well, that's just comics.
Yeah. And what's not to like about that?
I think basically, the criticism of War of the Realms that we've maybe accidentally stumbled upon is that in and of itself, it's maybe not that compelling because it's just a big fight. It's just kind of, it works on the assumption that you are coming at it. Like to be fair, most people reading the series probably did, as someone who's been following at least most of the Thor comics, and are like reading it as the conclusion to that.
Yeah, which is basically me. I'm reading this as the conclusion to a big bunch of Thor comics.
Yeah, I'd say it's like you're watching Return of the Jedi without having seen New Hope and Empire Strikes Back. But the problem with that as well is that Mick hates Star Wars.
Okay, right. It's basically Star Trek First Contact, the movie, without having watched any of The Next Generation. There you go.
Well, that's a bit unfair because I have watched Star Trek The Next Generation, but First Contact still sucked.
Okay, well, one of the Star Trek...
It's like watching one of the big Arrowverse crossovers without having seen any of the TV shows.
Ah, right, that makes sense, yeah.
Yeah.
I did it.
We found it.
The thing is, it wasn't that I was out of touch with the storylines, because doing this podcast, you pick it up, because even, I mean, some of the standalone trade paperbacks that I've done in the last few months have either had a lead into War of the Realms. I think when we did Free Comic Book Day, there was a War of the Realms issue.
Oh, yeah. Marvel have been building up to this for a while.
So,
yeah.
But I think also the point I'm trying to get across is that in the Thor series, this has been something that's been kind of slowly ramping up and escalating.
Yeah.
So it feels like kind of more of just the natural next step up rather than just going, oh, this is like a thing I'm aware of and now it's just big fighty punchy action.
Yeah, which is one of the reasons why I think it differs a little bit from the stuff that Marvel have done before, in the fact that they did build up to this, not just this year, but they've been building up to this. I mean, quite literally, the entirety of the Jane Foster run in Thor was a build-up to this.
I mean, well, heck, even before that, it's pretty much from, like, the second arc of Jason Aaron's Thor back in 2012.
Yeah, so it's not something that suddenly appeared, whereas going back historically, most of the Marvel crossovers are things that appeared within months of them being announced.
Yeah. And I think the interesting thing is we've now seen that, like, that has its pros and its cons.
Yeah. I mean, one of the...
Look at us! We're doing, like, a proper discussion.
Yeah.
And it's like, got balance and everything.
I mean, the thing I like
Who
about...
Who are we and what have we done with Thor panel?
I don't know. The thing that I like about the War of the Realms, on the plus side of it, you've got all of these little standalone stories that you can tell as part of War of the Realms. And unlike when they did stuff like the Infinity Gauntlet back in the 90s, where you had these individual issues that were crossovers into the Infinity Gauntlet and stuff like that, you've got set things like Spider-Man and the League of Realms and War of the Realms War Scrolls and stuff like that, which featured different characters.
Yeah, and hey, since we're there, Rob, would you like to talk about some of these spin-off books?
Yeah, Spider-Man and Daredevil was an interesting one from the Spider-Man angle. I mean, the Daredevil angle wasn't as interesting for me. I did like it, but I mean, the whole idea of Daredevil coming to terms with being some kind of cosmic being was the interesting angle for that.
Another thing that happens in the series to set this up is Daredevil is given the powers of Heimdall.
Yeah.
Actually, that's something was never sure of in the series itself.
Yeah.
Can Daredevil, like, see things now?
No.
Or is it just, like, he hears
everything
things from across the universe, like, can smell every smell?
Basically, yeah, because he's blind, all his other senses become cosmically enhanced. So even though he can't see, his radar sense gives him the ability to see, kind of. And so using all those other senses, he is just as effective as Heimdall. And so there is a kind of balance there, but I actually thought the Spider-Man story was actually more interesting. The reason why Thor chose Spider-Man to lead this particular group of ragtag heroes on an A-team style mission to rescue a bunch of prisoners from a bunch of angels.
And again, to explain the actual plot, so this is where the War of the Realms collections have been a bit of a pain in my butt, because this is actually two different comic series that came out. So the Daredevil stuff happened in War Scrolls, which is the kind of book Marvel seems to do all the time with these series, where it's like basically a bunch of like a collection of different one-off stories for each issue.
Yeah.
I think you had stuff like that for Secret Empire and Civil War 2. And then the Spider-Man stuff is from Spider-Man and the League of Realms, which is basically, to explain the League of Realms, it's basically sort of Thor's version of the Avengers.
But
which, saying that, I realise is also just the Avengers.
Yeah.
But I mean, this one is from like all the other realms.
Yeah.
That's why it's a League of Realms.
And apparently Spider-Man...
Do you get it, Mick?
No!
Spider-Man's the one...
I stopped listening at issue two.
It's fine. You go back to sleep, Mick. It's been a long day for you.
Yeah. I love the rationale Thor has for putting Spider-Man in charge of the League of Realms, because he's the most Midgardian man that Thor knows. And Spider-Man proves it. Yep. Spider-Man is the most human of the superheroes, which is something pretty much everyone knows already.
Well, apart from Punisher.
Yeah, Punisher's not really human.
He's not a man. He's vengeance incarnate.
I don't mean
that. That was Ghost Rider.
Shooty. No, it's not. It's any comic in which the Punisher is in, because he's so great, Mick. So freaking great, Punisher.
He's so super serious, Mick. You don't know.
Laser eye beams and fly. Well, he's got a gun and he's going to shoot all the bad things.
Yeah,
and
even
that's even more effective somehow.
Oh, no. We'll get to the gun part, which is why the Punisher's addition in all this is ridiculous. And we'll get to that in a bit, right? You'll understand why when we get to it, because that's in New Agents of Atlas, right? So we'll get to that. But anyway, I like the fact
I didn't even know there were old Agents of Atlas.
Yeah, there's new ones now as well. I like the fact that Spider-Man, where all the other heroes from the different realms are all going, oh, we want to fight and kill and everything like that, Spider-Man actually uses his brain and uses his mouth to solve the problem.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was like the thing I really liked about having Spider-Man in this book. Is he's like the one hero when it's like a flat-out war, he's like the only one who doesn't say, okay, I may as well start killing things now.
Yeah.
I feel like in these situations, it's kind of a level of, it is acceptable to kill these things.
Yeah.
But Spider-Man, he sticks to his guns, which ironically is no guns.
Yeah. I mean, some of the others that were in here were Giant Man.
Giant Man was a lot of fun. Actually, who did Spider-Man and the League of Realms, because that was a very fun series as well.
Spider-Man and the League of Realms was Sean Ryan,
that's it.
But yeah, Giant Man was another fun one. That was the Giant Man one was Giant Man 1-3 and War of the Realms War Scrolls number 1 and the Astonishing Ant-Man number 6, which I wasn't too happy about that one. But the Giant Man one was basically four different giant men. So you had Scott Lang, and you had his buddy, what's-his-face, who's actually the one called Giant Man.
That's Raz
Malhotra.
Malhotra, his last name.
Then you had Tom Foster, who's also known as Goliath, and then you've got Eric Justin, who's Atlas. This had a lot of fun moments in it. The fact that Goliath can't grow as big as the rest of them, and so they're just winding him up about it, because everyone else grows to whatever size it is, you know, the size of the Frost Giants, but he's just firmly at his size, which only comes up to, like, their knees.
Yeah, like, he's, like, as tall as a building, but has short man syndrome.
Yeah. And then having to paint themselves blue and get past all the Frost Giants was fun as well.
Yeah. What I like about that book is that their plan is incredibly dumb, and it knows that their plan is incredibly dumb.
Yeah. It's just, it's so much fun.
I think Leah Williams did that one, didn't she?
Yeah, Lee Williams did that one. The other stuff in here, I wasn't too hot on. The Warriors Fall thing, I didn't really like the art style for that. And the whole bit with Howard the Duck, I didn't really understand why that was in there. And then the very last bit.
Yeah, I think basically that's the bit of War Scrolls that wasn't the Daredevil stuff.
Yeah. The last bit was Cassie Lang, is it?
Yeah.
Finding out
basically,
about...
what the thing is, this collection just has a random issue of Ant-Man in it.
Yeah. Which I didn't quite understand.
You've got to meet that minimum page requirement, Rob.
True. Venom was fun because you had it's Eddie Brock, isn't it?
It is indeed.
Yeah, and it's Venom 13 to 15 and Web of Venom, Cult of Carnage at the end. Venom's by Cullen Bunn and it's continues to be good and interesting. And this one was Eddie Brock and his son who thinks that he's his brother. And he's basically got it into his head that he's going to protect him.
Like some kind of lethal protector.
Yeah, like some kind of lethal protector. What I like about this is that they didn't go for the angle of Venom just becoming this mindless, two-minded creature again. It was all Eddie Brock. And he's up against Jack-O-Lantern, who's been given the same powers by these frost giant witches or whatever.
Is Jack-O-Lantern not a man whose head is a pumpkin, what is on fire?
Yeah.
Seems like a weird choice to give frost giant powers to.
Yeah.
Kind of antithetical.
Yeah, but what I liked was the art style in this wavered for Eddie Brock between being complete Venom monster to actually being some kind of knight in shining armour. Depending on his mental state, it kept changing.
Yeah, that actually does sound quite neat. I do have an important question to ask about Venom Go, though.
Go.
Did he get him?
Yes, he got him. Yes, he got him. Because don't forget, Jack-O-Lantern ran into Venom before, and Venom basically trashed him and left him in an alleyway, so Jack-O-Lantern's got a score to settle. I like the fact that he never once lost sight of Eddie Brock's goal of protecting his son. That was his sole focus. Nice. And that I liked. I liked the fact that it was very focused on that, so the War of the Realms was something that was background to that.
Anyway, what else we got?
And the Cult of Carnage stuff was a cure for the next big thing, but...
I meant Book Wars.
Yeah, that was in the Venom one. I think the two best that I've read for War of the Realms were Agents of Atlas and Journey into Mystery. And we'll do Journey into Mystery first.
Yeah, we should. That is the one written by the McElroys.
Yep.
By which I mean the McElroys. They're them with their successful podcasting.
It's so much fun.
It is an absolute delight.
It's a hoot and a half. I mean, Miles Morales, Kate Bishop, Simon Williams, or Wonder Man, who's now a pacifist.
Actually, yeah, this is probably the only thing you need to know to sell this book. Wonder Man is an enjoyable character in this.
Yeah. Deathlok 2.0, Thori, the murder dog.
Who is the best dog.
Yes. Him and Lockjaw should really have their own series.
Solving crimes and probably biting things.
I've just realised where this week's stitch-up occurred. You guys told me to stick to the 6-issue main series.
Yeah.
All the fun seems to be going on in the spin-offs.
This is kind of true.
Yeah, remember that bit before the show when we said, hey Mick, whatever you do, don't read War of the Realms Journey into Mystery. It's no fun at all and you won't like it.
Yeah.
It was a lie.
But anyway, you also have Balder the Brave, who has to protect his and Thor's baby sister, who was born because Odin and Freya got jiggy some point, somewhere in the dimensional gap between realms, where Surtur's powers
remain. I don't think it's becoming to mention Freya's interdimensional gap.
Oh, and I forgot, you have one of the best characters, Sebastian Druid, who was a candidate to
what
become...
What does he do for a living?
IT consultant.
Yeah, he was a candidate to become Sorcerer Supreme, and...
But could only manage adequate druid.
Yeah.
Well, fun fact, me, he is, I can't remember, either the nephew or son of Dr. Druid.
Yeah.
Second fun fact... no one cares who Dr. Druid is.
Yep. I mean, there's a great bit where Miles and Sebastian are sitting at a table and they've got these toys that they've made look like each other, and they're fighting with the toys and making the sound effects because there's nothing to do on this RV.
Yeah, it's basically a road trip.
Yeah, I mean, it's got a complete...
With more demons.
It's got a complete cast of Trailer Park Skrulls, Ghost Cowboys, and Ares the God of War.
Oh, and what's it? Is it like HenchCon? The convention for henchmen?
I forgot HenchCon is just... Oh, HenchCon is amazing.
Oh, now, hold on. I've seen that idea somewhere else.
What, a convention for henchmen?
Yeah, I'm sure I have.
You probably have. I wouldn't say it's a new idea, but it's just amazing to see it in a big Marvel event. And anyway, finally, we come to the last one. And this one's the one that Andrew hasn't actually read. This is New Agents of Atlas.
I just not only haven't read, but I generally don't know a single thing about it.
Yeah, this is by Greg Pak, with art by Gang Hyuk Lim, Moy R, and Pop Man. And colours by Frederico Blee, Eric Asiniega, and Andres Mota. And letters by VC's Clayton Cowles, who seems to be everywhere. This one I like because there are a lot of the Marvel heroes from the East and South America in this who you don't normally see. For example, you've got Pearl Pangang, who goes by the codename Wave, and I think she's a South American hero. Actually, Pearl might be from Hawaii, sorry. Then you've got Lei Ling, who is Aero, and her home base is in Shanghai. And the two of them don't really deal with each other, but they've got to help each other out. And then you've got the school in Mumbai that Jimmy Woo is running for Atlas.
Maybe.
There you've got Cindy Moon, Silk, Kamala Khan, Ms. Marvel, Shang-Chi, Amadeus Cho, who now goes by the name of Braun instead of Hulk, or Totally Awesome Hulk.
Yeah, basically, at some point, Amadeus Cho seems to have done some cardio, and he's a bit trimmer now.
He's a bit trimmer, but also because he kind of tried to take over New York, he decided not to Hulk out as much.
Oh, bad Amadeus. Naughty.
Yes.
Hit him on the nose with a rolled-up newspaper.
So anyway, they're at the school and they're basically showing the students what teamwork is all about, kind of badly. And then the War of the Realms happens. And so they have to join forces with a bunch of heroes from around the world, starting with Korea, where you have White Fox. Cinder's soldiers are invading Korea. And then you have Dan B, who is a Taekwondo prodigy, who is a little girl wearing a bear mask. And that generates Ayo, who is a magic bear, who then does Taekwondo with her.
I mean, look, I'm not going to say that a lot of what you've said wasn't necessary, but you could have just led with magic Taekwondo bear.
I did, before the episode started. That's what got you interested.
I know, and I mean, who needs more than that?
Yeah, a magic Taekwondo bear is just the best thing. So, Greg Pak, wonderful idea there, brilliant. Then you've got Seol Hee, who also goes by the name Luna Snow, who has ice powers and is busy punching Cinder's soldiers. When she shows up on the scene, Amadeus Cho and Cindy Moon are just like, whoa, who's that? He's like, oh my god, it's Luna Snow. What do you mean, who? It's a K-pop star and superhero. And Cindy Moon's just freaking out because she's like a huge fan.
K-pop. That's a word I know.
Yeah, I like the fact that you've got this thing in here where you have heroes being fans of other heroes who they've not met. They just know by reputation and by their skill set or powers or what they've done. I like the fact that Shang-Chi, being the master of Kung Fu, as in all Kung Fu, he keeps showing up everybody else and teaching them how to fight because, as far as he's concerned, they don't know how to fight. Then you have Tutu Pele, who is the actual real goddess of fire for planet Earth.
Oh, like the actual Pele?
No, not the actual footballer.
I mean, have you ever seen the two of them in the same room?
No, I haven't. Now, you have a fair point there.
Yeah.
And during Pele's career, they did say he was on fire. Anyway, more heroes join the fray. You've got Linley, who is a sword master, and they're basically all trying to fight against Cinder's soldiers, and everyone has to come together. But when Amadeus and the rest of them show up on the scene, Amadeus does his usual thing of trying to help and basically Frank Spencering it. Amadeus Cho is basically Marvel's version of Frank Spencer. He is, isn't he?
I mean, it's, for better or worse, it's not something I can argue against.
Super smart, but really, really dumb. The level of ineptitude when he tries to help out is astonishing.
Yeah. So Agents of Atlas, good then.
Yes, it's good. It's serious, but it's also, it's that kind of fun serious where you can enjoy the story and you can go with it. I mean, the bits where Shang-Chi just turns up and starts teaching people. And there's little bits, there's little cultural references as well, which I find hilarious. Because when they go to one of the hideouts, they're like, so we just sit around and wait? Shang-Chi says, no, we eat. One of the Chinese heroes opens the cupboard and says, all they have is spam, but everyone else is like, ooh, spam. And so next thing, there's a feast that has like spam fried rice and spam musubi and spam salog and stuff like that. And everybody's really enjoying it. Because in countries like Hawaii,
it's a much maligned meat is spam.
Yeah, well, in countries like Hawaii and places and Japan and Korea and places like that, spam is kind of a thing that they use as a matter of course. They have various dishes and stuff like that that they've created and developed using spam. And so they don't treat it the way we do. So it's nice to see those cultural references making their way into mainstream comics as well. So yeah.
Nice. And yeah, I think that probably does us for War of the Realms then.
Yeah.
We've had some laughs, had some tears, even learned a little something or two along the way.
Yep.
And I had a lovely little nap.
You did indeed. Yeah. You recharge your batteries now, little guy.
I think so. Please don't make me read issue 3, though.
We won't. We won't.
I am going to make you go on a break, though, before we come back with what we've been reading.
Cool.
Hello, I'm J. Michael Tatum, and you're listening to one hell of a show, The Geek Show.
Have you ever been reading through a stack of comics and thought, maybe I should see what this Arkham Asylum game is all about? Or been playing Marvel vs. Capcom and felt like you were at a real disadvantage since you didn't know who half the characters were? Well, Play Comics is the show for you. I'm Chris, and each episode we take a look at video games based on comic properties and how well they stick to that source material. So whether you know the comics and want to know how all these games work, or you know the games and want to find out where all this craziness came from, go check out Play Comics at playcomics.com or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back, and now after all of that War of the Realms stuff, it's time for other stuff we've been reading, starting with Mick.
Yep, so I've been reading Captain Marvel Re-entry. Careful, Rob.
I'm trying not to laugh.
No, I described this bit as a pregnant pause, but that's probably not the right
term. I was trying so hard not to laugh.
This is Captain Marvel by Kelly Thompson, Carmen Canero, and Tamara Bonvillain, and collects issues 1-5 of the 2019 run of Captain Marvel. And so Carol's been out in space. Doing some time. She's had some family issues, which I believe I covered some of in a previous Captain Marvel issue.
Hang on, you said she was doing some time. Was she in space prison or something?
No, she spent some time, I said.
No, you said doing some time.
You did say doing some time.
Did I? Well, she was... Oh, can we start again?
Anyway, Carol Danvers is in space.
Carol Danvers has been in space. She's kind of been dealing with some family stuff. She needed a break from the Avengers, and she's been up in space doing space stuff and protecting Earth that way. And she's decided to come back. Her brother had a life-threatening injury. Carol took some time out to care for him. A Kree assassin attacked her family home. Killed her mother.
It's always a pain in the butt when that happens.
And she missed the PPI claims deadline.
Oh, no.
I know.
But Arnie told her and everything.
I know.
So was this after the rebooting of her powers and abilities, where it turned out that she was also a part Kree or something?
This was covered in the, it wasn't the Captain Marvel prelude. It was The Life of Captain Marvel.
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah. Which I covered a few weeks back on the, well, I say a couple, a few months back on the show.
Yes.
So this, I guess, is possibly a direct follow-on from that. No, because they must have done some comics of her out in space. But she stepped down from the Avengers. She stepped down from Alpha Flight.
She's also still on the Avengers, though, which is a bit awkward. Like, I mean, in the book Avengers, she is one of the Avengers.
Yeah. But now her brother's better, and she understands her own place in the universe a bit better. So it's time for Captain Marvel to take flight. And lucky it is that she's made the decision to do that right now, because there's a giant space squid creature attacking Lower Manhattan.
I mean, probably someone else could have got it.
Well, you know, she's not on her own. Spider-Woman's there, helping out. And they do a bit of a team-up, which is quite humorous. They're sort of working well together as a team. They take out the space squid, but not before Carol has got mightily, mightily angry with it. And you remember when Drax takes out that squid in Volume 2?
Oh, Guardians, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, where he, like, stabs his way out of it.
Yeah. Captain Marvel does something similar with an energy blast.
That must be kind of smelly.
And so the area around the Statue of Liberty ends up with a lot of calamari in it. Anyway, Iron Man turns up and asks Carol to take some of one of the junior Avengers under her wing. Hazmat is having trouble settling in. But I think there's a certain sort of sass that Hazmat has that Tony thinks Carol can take her under her wing and develop her. Anyway, there's some reconnecting with Tony. There's some reconnecting with Rhodey. And then there's an interview to be done, which Tony somehow manages to convince her to do in a sort of attempt to humanize the Avengers and make them seem a bit more down to earth, because I think there's a public opinion that they just deal with the big stuff. They don't care about the little guys. They're not doing street level stuff. And Ripley Ryan is the journalist assigned to the interview, and she meets up with Captain Marvel for the interview to happen. And wouldn't you just know it, they get attacked.
Right nuisance those supervillains are.
They are. This one is called Nuclear Man.
What?
I mean, he sounds pretty self-explanatory to me.
Well,
I'm just a bit confused as to when this became Superman 4.
Exactly. That was my initial... hold on. Nuclear Man? Isn't that Dolph Lundgren?
Oh, that's right. Is that Dolph Lundgren?
Wasn't it Dolph Lundgren?
No.
It was someone like that,
wasn't
it? It
was some guy who looks remarkably like Dolph Lundgren, but it wasn't Dolph Lundgren. At least not as far as I'm aware.
Oh, no. Portrayed by Mark Pillow.
He's a big softy, really.
But voiced by Gene Hackman. Yeah. Anyway, just because, I mean, I don't think I've watched Superman 4 since it was out on general release, to be fair. But this is a different Nuclear Man, because regular readers of Marvel Comics may know him better as a Fantastic Four villain called Machismo. No?
I don't.
So he's a bit, clearly a bit of a B-rate villain. Basically, he's a misogynist who is looking for a bride in his citadel, and he's created a barrier on Roosevelt Island that allows certain individuals in, Captain Marvel being one of them, and the other Avengers turn up to try and help out, but they can't pass through the barrier.
Is this the fellow who's wearing a white fur coat with a pink mohawk or something like that?
Yes.
Oh, him. Oh.
Yeah. So he opens a portal through this barrier. He's chased by Carol. And they end up in this other dimension on Roosevelt Island where time passes at a different rate. It's a bit like, is it the season two opener of Buffy, where she's in hell and time is traveling at a different speed to on the surface?
Yeah.
So weeks are passing compared to hours on the surface. And this is a really nice story because what happens is that Captain Marvel goes off and actually becomes a leader. She shapes a ragtag, all hope is lost group of women who've been trampled down by this machismo character. And it gets to a showdown between her and Rogue. And the idea is that machismo will take whichever one wins as his bride.
And who wouldn't want to fight for a prize like that?
Well, now, the only heroes that manage to get through the barrier at various points are She-Hulk, Echo, Hazmat, and there are some that are already there. So Spider-Woman's already there and a couple of others. And they're the sort of war cabinet. They're also aided and abetted by the one guy that's managed to escape from this citadel who turns out to be the son of Machismo.
Sorry, that's a T-shirt if ever there was one.
Son of Machismo.
For somebody
on... like a 70s horror movie.
or just, you know, one of those muscly guys who works out on Muscle Beach or something like that.
Yeah, so this Captain Marvel's good then.
Yeah, and it actually looks like it's going to be one of those sort of a rallying cry, we're going to rise up, beat the oppressor, blah, blah, blah. But there's actually more subtlety to it than that because some of the heroes, and they don't really understand why, when they pass through the portal, either lose their powers or their powers become unpredictable. So they have to solve that problem. They have to solve the problem of this son of Machismo, and they have to overcome whatever it is Machismo's got planned. And then, as if that wasn't enough, it turns out he's not the villain after all.
You wacky sitcom end views.
Because there's a darker power at work. And then, it says, next, the War of the Realms.
Ah, you thought you could escape it by coming to the review section, but I lied. It's everywhere.
Oh.
And it's a fun story. It doesn't get bogged down in a load of backstory, so we understand that Carol's returned from a time in space. You don't have to know any of that that's gone before. It's just she's been up in space, she's come back. That's all there is to it.
That's all you need to know.
Yeah. I've been enjoying this recent set of Captain Marvel comics. They're not bigging up that she's a female hero. It's not like you usually get in the wake of a Marvel movie in that they're desperately trying to sort of fill the gap between Captain Marvel and Captain Marvel 2 with big stories. These just feel like genuine, just good comic book stories.
Yeah, and I guess it's not like it's a new Captain Marvel series and, oh, look, Yon Rogg's just happened to pop up.
Yeah, it's not relying on any of that sort of story-heavy links to things that moviegoers might be familiar with. It's just, this is a superhero, let's tell stories about her. The Amanda Connor covers are a bit at odds with the actual art. Usually I find that when they have a different cover artist, it complements the artwork inside the comic. But in this case, there's a very distinctive Connor style that doesn't match what's inside. Okay. There's lots of nice little...
Yeah, I can get that.
Yeah. There's lots of nice little in-jokes where people sort of get introduced to Carol Danvers and they'll say something like, I preferred the short hair, or I preferred the long hair, or I like the other suit, and that kind of thing. But yeah, it's really enjoyable. You get some of that lippy sass that you get from Captain Marvel, and I really liked it.
Good stuff. Right, so over to me then. I have got one. We may as well make this an all-Marvel show, why not? I have been reading Champions, Volume 1, Beat the Devil.
Is this a War of the Realms thing?
How very dare you? Champions are their own distinct superhero team with their own adventures and real problems. And yes, there's a War of the Realms tie-in for some of the issues. Fine, you got me. So it's written by Jim Zub with art by Stephen Cummings and Juan Ramirez with colours by Marcio Menez, Eric Arcenega, and Federico Blee, and letters by Pirates That Scamp Again, VC's Clayton Cowles.
He gets everywhere.
Except VC, it would seem.
Indeed. Maybe he's like, he's escaped from VC.
Yeah.
Anyway, the champions. So this was a series that was interested to check out, because I know, but the first few issues of Champions, back when that series first started, it was Mark Waid writing it, and I did not care for that book at all. So I was interested to check out kind of how it's changed now that Jim Zub is the one writing it. And the answer is a lot. It's changed a lot. Because the Champions, it's not just, you know, a small group of teen heroes now. It's a much bigger group of teen heroes now. There's like 11 odd members in this first story who I will not go through all of them are, because a lot of that is not that pertinent. But yeah, Miss Marvel, Amadeus Cho, Vision, and Miles Morales, kind of the core members of the Champions, they're still kicking about and kind of committed to, you know, taking the Champions global.
What about Cyclops, you know, and Nova?
Well, Cyclops, he's not on the team because Teen Cyclops had to go back to the future, and let's not get back into Extermination.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah, no.
Nova, though, yes and no. Sam Alexander is still on the team, but he is now devoid of that Nova helmet.
The Nova helmet that was like two sizes too big for him.
Yeah, that one. Apparently, the Nova Corps came and said, "Can we have our helmet back, please, mister?" So now he's just Sam. And yeah, I think... So the first issue I liked a lot. I think it does a good job kind of booking some, a soft reboot of the Champions.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's kind of Ms. Marvel saying, I started the Champions, you know, we used to be a bunch of kids, now we're this big world-spanning organization. And it kind of, you know, introduces you to probably some of the members you might not be familiar with. Like, there's a Locust, who is kind of a martial arts type person. Falcon, not that Falcon, but is also a Birdman who can do flying. Snowguard, who is a bird woman who can do flying and also turns into a wolf, which might make you think that makes Falcon a little bit redundant. And that's a fact he's kind of aware of and is trying his best to prove his worth. And you've also got Ironheart and the Wasp and Power Man, who is kind of the newest recruit to the Champions. He is basically Luke Cage's protege. He has powers that are a bit weird and I might get into later.
I was going to say, Power Man seems a bit too old to be part of the Champions.
Yeah, it would be a bit weird with just Luke Cage and a bunch of teens. So yeah, things are going well for the Champions, you know. They're kind of meeting their mandate to make the world a better place. And this issue so gets a bit weird towards the end, because you have a bit where the original Champions, so, you know, Ms. Marvel, Amadeus, Viv, and Miles, they are about to land in Dubai to stop a character who I'm glad to see is back, Zazax, the Electric Man. He's a big man made of electric.
Of course he is.
But so the weirdness starts with, it then just cuts to kind of after this mission and the Champions are celebrating, except for Miles and Amadeus, who, you know, they're not interacting with anyone. When anyone does try and talk to them, they kind of snap at them and just storm off. So what's going on? And it turns out what's going on is, because in the next issue we actually see that fight with Zazax, doesn't actually go as well as you might think from that first issue.
Okay.
Because while Amadeus is trying to set up his big thingy-majigger that's going to suck Zax into it, he kills Miss Marvel and Viv.
What?
Yeah. Like, so Miles and Amadeus, they're just there clutching their dead teammates when who should show up? It's okay. It's everyone's favorite hero come to save the day. No, it's not. It's Mephisto. And he basically makes the boys an offer to say, hey, it's cool. If you want, I can just rewind time a bit, give you the chance to, you know, defeat Zax instantly, save your teammates. Because, you know, obviously this time around, Amadeus will know, you know, the exact calculations needed to set up his device properly. And hey, you know, don't even need to give me your souls or anything. Completely free deal. Which, of course, Miles is the one who stands and says, yep, we'll take it. But what Miles kind of doesn't realize at the time is, so early on in the fight, he gets like knocked away by Zax and ends up saving this woman who's about to be crushed by a building.
Mm.
But when they rewind time, obviously this time Miles knows that blow is coming, so he dodges out the way and they beat Zax. But that building was still destroyed. Only this time Miles wasn't there to save the woman.
Ah.
And that's the deal. Turns out, even though he didn't realize it, Miles was trading like one life for his friends. Unfortunately, that's kind of the point where the series starts to dip a bit for me. Because you get all this set up for the really interesting story, but then it turns out it's pretty much just an excuse for Miles to leave the team. And that seems to be a pattern with a lot of this book, in that it's kind of clearing the board of a lot of maybe some of the older members of the Champions. It's like, you've got that, and then you've got another thing where one of Sam's old enemies escapes, comes to kill him. But when she realizes he doesn't have his helmet, she basically says, if you come with me, I'll help you get your helmet back. And then, you know, we can have a proper fight to the death. So he agrees and runs off with her. And then, like, Ironheart literally just kind of walks off on one panel and is just gone.
What?
Because apparently there's a whole thing where, like, in one of the previous issues, Viv kissed her, and she wasn't too cool with that. So now she's taking some time off. And then we got to, like, the first War of the Realms tie-in issue, where it literally starts with Ms. Marvel talking about how, like, also Amadeus is left to go deal with the Agents of Atlas, and, you know, Sam's gone, Ironheart's gone, and also apparently Wasp had a bit of a breakdown in her series, so she's gone now as well. And it's just, I realised to a degree, Jim's didn't have that much control over what happens in other people's series.
Mm.
But really, it would have been better to, like, write out some of the characters before this kind of reboot.
Yeah.
You know, have this start as, like, the new Champions, which I feel like is where it's going.
One of the other things, and I'm just throwing this out there, one of the other things that they could do, if they're going to have a team, you don't have to have a separate series for a lot of the members.
Yeah, I feel like that is kind of an issue with Marvel now, is that kind of everyone on a team always seems to also get their own solo series.
I think that's one of the reasons why I liked that New Agents of Atlas. Most of the characters in that didn't actually have their own series, except for maybe Cindy Moon and Amadeus Cho and Kamala Khan. That's it.
That being said, I think a lot of them do now.
Do they?
Yeah, like, I'm pretty sure Swordmaster, was that his name?
It's the dumbest name for a superhero.
He's the Master of Swords.
I am the Sword Master!
But yeah, anyway, that's kind of what is a lot of this Champions run, and especially because it seems to be one of those rare comics where it's not actually written for the trade.
Yeah.
So it does just seem like a collection of six issues rather than a whole storyline. But it does basically seem like I've just got some busy work. You know, bit of spring cleaning. But I think I would still be interested in reading more. Like, I do like some of these new characters. like Power Man, I think, is fun. So to explain Power Man, he is, you know, Iron Fist. You know how Iron Fist can like summon all of his chi and make an energy punch.
Yeah.
Imagine basically doing that, but instead of your own chi, you could like collect the chi of an area. So like he absorbs kind of the more history and culture a place has, the more powerful he gets.
Okay. I kind of get what you're saying. When you said that he absorbs the chi of an area, I was thinking, ooh, that's not good. That was my first thought. Having read a lot of Eastern stuff and having read a lot of stuff about martial arts and stuff like that, the whole absorption of chi from other creatures, for example, would not be a positive thing. It's usually...
Yeah, no, this is more like kind of ambient energy.
Right, okay. If it's ambient energy and stuff like that, then it's a bizarre power set for me to see in a Marvel comic. But then they are including a lot more Eastern stuff, and so they probably will start including some of the cultivation stuff, which is basically what you're talking about there, absorbing the ambient energy, powering up the body. Oh, look at me, I can fly on a flying sword.
Basically that, but it does lead to a really cool moment during the War of the Realm stuff. Although, also said, another cool thing in the War of the Realm stuff is that, like, adult Cyclops ends up joining them. As it's quite a sweet thing of, like, because even though he's back to being an adult, he still has, like, the memories of teen Cyclops.
All right.
So it's like, I still remember you guys being my friends. I like that there's a bit at the end where, like, Havok's chewing out, like, how could you just abandon us? We're your team. He's like, I know, that's why I went, because my team needed me. It's just a nice, sweet little bit of, he still remembers his friends.
See, I like that bit. I've always considered champions to be that kind of team. It should be, you remember the Goonies?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, but yeah, I feel like that is kind of one of my overall problems. Is, yeah, but no, we'll get to that in a sec, because what I did want to say is the cool thing with Power Man is they're fighting like soldiers from hell.
Yeah.
And one of them stabs Power Man. Like, there's this kind of brief moment of shock, and then he just goes, hey, this sword got a lot of history tied to it, doesn't it? And then suddenly just like grows like 20 feet high.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's cool. It's like, that's the thing that makes me go, oh yeah, I quite like Power Man, actually. He's a lot of fun.
Yeah. But yeah, as I was saying, for me, Champions was basically Goonies with superpowers.
Yeah, and I feel like that's what the book's lost a bit.
Yeah.
Like, as much as I'm glad it's not doing the kind of ham-fisted attempts at tackling social issues anymore.
Yeah.
I think like it's maybe course-corrected a bit too much, in that now it's just this very generically superhero comic.
See,
like, this could easily be The Avengers or something.
Yeah, and I don't understand that. They're a bunch of kids with superpowers, so why aren't they off having adventures and just exploring and doing their own thing? They can basically save the world and do stuff as well, but they could do that as an extension of them going to, like, different parts of the world, different, you know, joining other super teams in space or something like that, and just generally broadening their horizons as kids I want to do.
Yeah. Yeah, but overall, like, I'm interested in reading more. Like, I like the characters. I'm interested to see where some of the plot goes.
I mean, I'd love it if they include the Goonies reference at some point with, like, Kamala or someone shouting, champions never say die.
Hey, Rob. Did you want to know something awful?
What?
That we're going to close the show on. All of the champions are probably too young to have seen the Goonies.
Yeah, I know. But if there was ever any character from the Champions who should be made to do the truffle shuffle, it's Amadeus Cho. He is the Frank Spencer of the Marvel Universe. I've said it. There, it's done.
And of course, all the audience members who got that joke are probably listening in black and white.
Well, though, it's good. We've had, like, the insightful and good discussion part. It's nice to balance it out with this.
Yes. Anyway, since we are at the end of the show, if you want to catch any of the other episodes of 4Panel, or indeed any of the other shows that make up the Geek Show podcast family. You'll find them all on our website, thegeekshow.co.uk, where you'll also find various video game reviews and various other things. Check out my review of Children of Morta. It's contender for Game of the Year, I guarantee it, even though it's an indie game. But also, you'll find our Patreon, our shop, and various other things. So have a visit. If you're listening through any podcast service, we are available on all of them after all, then leave us a rating, leave us a review. It does help us with exposure. It does help us improve. Until next time, I've been Rob.
I've been Andrew.
And I've been Mick.
And we will see you all later.
Thanks for listening.
Goodbye now.